Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Cape Crusader Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our new guest, Rent Hockey. We're here to break down Ronin Digital Express Presents Tower of Death and everything in between. I loved this story. I mean, I think I read it, it was a couple weeks ago, and I was so mind blown. Grateful to have the opportunity to talk to you in person about it, man. How are you doing today?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm grateful to be here. Thanks for responding and having me on. Thanks for the kind words. I'm doing well. I'm doing all right.
That's awesome.
I'm rounding up the big media tour. So feeling pretty good about heading into the weekend.
I'm gonna be honest with you, man. Your Twitter profile picture, you look exactly like it. I love the shades. Those are just perfect, man.
Yeah, I have a whole collection. I have a pair for every mood. Yeah.
So what's the mood today? What's the color signify?
Well, it's rose colored, right? So it's everything. You can't be mad when you have these on.
I love it. So let's kind of start beginning with the basics. If I'm not mistaken, Ronin Digital Express has 30 episodes. It's a Chanbara. Did I say that word right?
I think so.
Chanbara Western webcomic. Give us a little bit about that, as well as, who you are and how you got into creating comics.
Yeah, so Ronin Digital Express, it's an ongoing webcomic. We're on a bit of a hiatus now as I'm trying to figure out what's next. What's out there so far is just kind of like messing around, trying to just make a comic and go through the experience and work on something that I really, mixes genres that I really like. It's serialized, it's episodic, so each episode kind of stands on its own, but there's like, some threads that kind of carry throughout, but not really like a big Game of Thrones style investment where you have to like really invest in world building and remember a bunch of stuff. Like, you just sit down and like you read the new episode, the tropes are accessible enough that you can get in at any point, really. It's a blend of like influences like spaghetti westerns, old black and white samurai films, and it's all kind of got like a paint job of like, 90s anime, like the Toonami block on Cartoon Network, like those kinds of, that's kind of the aesthetic, that's the vibe. But the tropes and kind of the story content are a little more, they're pulling a little bit more from, Westerns, man with no name trope, things like that. And Tower of Death is a Kickstarter. You can finally get something in print. It's a one-shot episode, so you don't need to have read the webcomic to get into it. If you liked the webcomic, it's just, another bonus supersized episode. It stands on its own. And that's it, I guess.
So was this kind of your first start into, creating, this type of medium?
Well, I started off as a writer in comics, and I've got a couple of credits out there floating around as a writer. And I had always I had been mounting projects and trying to like project manage teams and things like that, which you have to do as a writer. It wasn't for me. And I always have had like a little bit of artistic talent. So I kind of came to a crossroads where I was like, I can either keep banging my head against the wall trying to work, on collaborative teams and relationships that fall apart for, every possible reason, not bad stuff, but just the life stuff of like, budgets and everything else. So I can continue to do that, or I can take a few years, put my head down, invest in this like little bit of talent I have on the artistic side and just try to make comics myself. And so that's what I did. I just kind of spent a few years, resolving my artistic weaknesses, and then came back. I've got like a bunch of stories that I would like to tell, but I wanted to start with something I thought was kind of fun, for lack of a better motivation. Like, well, what would be fun? Maybe like a Ronin, maybe like a samurai guy, that would be like a Western, like an anime kind of a thing. Maybe that would be fun. So yeah, that's how I cut my teeth. The Ronin Digital Express thing was always meant to just kind of be, like I said, cutting my teeth, putting it out there, seeing what I'm worth. But I ended up just really liking it, and I'm going to keep going with it. But it's, we're probably going to we're going to have to like reboot it a little bit and actually kind of pull together like a real story. And that's kind of what I'm in the middle of doing right now. But yeah, spending time in that world, spending time with those tropes. I mean, I just think it's part of me now.
Man, so what do you think it was when you were, you know, working more as a writer that just didn't mesh well? Was it like maybe the artist had a hard time getting your vision, or just maybe wearing the different hats involved with the creative process?
No, I mean, I think I had pretty good experiences for the most part with artists that I was working with. I think that it was just kind of, you know, to be totally vulnerable, I think that things just didn't happen as fast as I wanted them to.
Okay.
You know, like I kind of wanted to keep the buzz going of like being in the creative process, and I didn't want to do project management. You know what I mean? I didn't want to like, so I spend a lot of time when I write, you know, it's a lot of like writing while I'm doing the dishes kind of stuff, like just pulling together little story beats in my head, and then I'll put it down on paper. So like the actual like sitting down in front of a computer and writing is not really very long for me. And like, I'll keep making tweaks to it here and there, but to get the kick, the creative kick, you know, the creative high, from the writing, it just wasn't really enough. And I felt like I spent like 80% of my time in relationship management and project management. And that was boring to me. And then, you know, when it would come out, not exactly the way I wanted it, it just felt too much like, it felt like too much of a slog for me.
Yeah.
And so I wanted more of that sustained feeling of creative momentum and high while I was working on something. So it's, you know, so now what's kind of ironic is like the writing part of a comic for me is like the least of it. So I'm so happy that I actually pursued the art side, because I get the smallest endorphin kicks out of the writing now, and I get all of them in the art process. So yeah. If I had taken the different path, I would have totally missed out.
Like this whole entire time, you were just like missing out on like the best feeling possible.
Right. Like the level up was like huge for me in terms of like the, you know, working. I mean, it's just so much more fun, I guess, to see your creative vision from start to finish.
So you mentioned that you come up with ideas while you're doing dishes. Is the Green-Eyed Ronin's water technique from that? You're like doing dishes, splash of water off a dish, and you're like, you know what? This would be a cool technique.
You know what? I don't. It's one of those things where I think that things just sort of subconsciously make their way into your brain, and then you see them reinforced other places, because there's a there's like this great. Do you know about the manga Vagabond?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so there's this great, it's the perfect comic page. Okay, so anyone can Google this if they want to. If you Google like Vagabond manga perfect comic page, people have written articles about this, but it's a scene of the main guy, Musashi, who's semi-fictional. I mean, he's based on a real historical character, but the story about him and the legends that have cropped up around him are all fairly, you know, semi-true, let's say. Take artistic liberties, let's say. But there's a whole scene in the manga where he is practicing with his sword in the water, and there's like this great panel where he has it just like sticking out straight, and the water's like curling up over like the hokusai wave. And like people have broken this down, and they're like, here's the golden ratio, and you know, so it's like, there's like a
the sacred geometry spiral.
yeah. So there's like a lot of like, it's a great image though, but like I didn't see that at first, I don't think. Like I saw that after I had already finished, you know, this stretch of the webcomic that I've done. But yeah, it's like a reinforcement thing. It's like, oh yeah, swords and water together. There's something there.
Which is kind of weird, right? Because it almost like swords, you feel like it would rust in water.
Well, they do, but I think it's a lot of like, you know, samurai code, Bushido stuff, like the elements, the earth, the fire, wind, water. And there's very much like an attachment to kind of those, you know, the tangible elements of reality and what they represent and that sort of a thing. So it's all kind of in the soup, you know, in terms of like the philosophy that the baggage that these symbols of culture carry with them, like a katana sword, it's carrying all of that stuff behind it. And you've picked it up here and there throughout pop culture. And I think that's probably what was going on there.
So you mentioned that you wanted to dive in on some of your weaker aspects of art. I mean, I'm floored that you even had weak spots. Like, your interiors are gorgeous. Like, what did you have to improve upon to really get going with it?
You're not looking hard enough, my friend. I appreciate it. No, so yeah, I've said this before, but I think that the two big humps in art, and I, first off, I very, very strongly believe, and I believe this before all the AI stuff too, I believe anybody who wants to draw can learn how to draw. Literally anybody. And I, like, I always get the skepticism of like, oh, I can only do stick figures or whatever. I'm like, where do you think I start? I draw stick figures, and then I draw muscles on those stick figures, mm-hmm. and then I draw clothes on those, you know, those bodies. So yeah, we all start with stick figures. It's this, that's a start. That's drawing. That's a drawing, you know? So the difference being, maybe I have some natural ability so that to get proficient, it only takes me the typical 10,000 hours. You know what I mean? And maybe for you, it'll take 20, and maybe for somebody else, it'll take 25. So at that point, it's just a matter of discipline. It's like, how bad do you want this? If you don't want it bad enough to work 30,000 hours at it, if that's what you need to do, that's fine. You find something else that you like to do. Mm-hmm. But if you really, 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 really want it, I really think anybody can become an artist. I honestly believe that. So for me, but the two big things I would say are the two main veins that you have to get over are, you need to figure out the technical side of art. So that's like depth and perspective, yep. and things like that, right? Lighting. And then there's cartooning. And cartooning is like facial expressions, hands, you know, physical acting, that kind of a thing. So there's like humans and then situations you put the humans in, right? Settings, right? And so I had already had a lot of practice drawing humans. And for some people, that's harder than the technical stuff. Just because, you know,
fingers are like what trip people up the most.
Fingers are tough, but even like figuring out how to get like liveness in like a car. I mean, you see this a lot with artists that are, you know, not quite all the way there, but you can't quite put your finger on what's wrong with the art. Not wrong per se, but like, you know, what's not totally there yet. A lot of it is just like there's not a lot of life in like the expressions and the faces and that sort of thing. And it's not really like a thing that you kind of have to find your own way of doing it. Like there's not really like an instruction manual you can give someone to be like, this will make them look more alive. This will make them look more cartoony. You really kind of have to just figure out how you can make that happen with your style. So the cartooning and like the hands and the anatomy stuff, I had a pretty decent head start on that because I've been, you know, scribbling characters into the margins of my notebooks for, you know, my whole life. So that part, I already had a lot of practice. I wasn't perfect, but I had a lot of my bad drawings were behind me by the time I decided to start doing this. So really I had to figure out the technical stuff. I had to figure out, you know, 1 point, 2 point, 3 point perspective. I had to figure out lighting, things like that. And that's all, you know, I think, me personally, if you had to choose which thing was easier to learn, I would say that's easier to learn because it's just principles, you know? And I think that, yeah, drawing good humans, that's way harder, in my view. So I was lucky. I had kind of already had a lot of experience doing the human part, and I needed to catch up. I mean, it still takes time. It's not like it was a weekend and then suddenly I knew how to draw buildings. You know, it still took quite a while. I drew a lot of bad drawings. I still draw a lot of bad drawings, but that was kind of the stuff that I had to catch up on.
So, I mean, you've talked about, you know, drawing for quite some time. Was the Green-Eyed Ronin like one of those characters that you kind of just had a reoccurring appearance, you know, along the way, or did he kind of just spring out of nowhere?
It really kind of sprung out of nowhere. When I first I worked digitally, and when I first got a tablet, I was playing around with some of the programs that you draw with. And I was just designing characters. And I kind of ended up in a lane of like, this was totally just free association. And I ended up in this lane of like, you know, samurai Ronin, but maybe mixed with like a little bit of Star Wars, you know, kind of like retro futuristic type of stuff. And I drew like just dozens and dozens of characters in kind of that style. And at the end of it, I picked out a couple that I thought were really interesting. And I was just like, I wonder if these guys all have like a story, you know, I wonder if there's something here. And the most appealing one was this green-eyed Ronin character. He felt like he was the protagonist. And his initial, I think I've shared an image of it before. His initial costume was kind of like blue jeans and like a weathered gray army jacket. And like those like wooden Japanese sandals with like the block, mm-hmm. like the Jenga blocks underneath. They have an actual name. I just don't know what it is right now.
You know, that was a perfect description though. The second you said, I was like, wow, that was like spot on.
Yeah. Well, writer, what can I say? No, I'm just kidding. It was kind of a basic costume. And so he doesn't look like that now. I mean, his anatomy and like everything else about him is pretty much the same, but he's got new clothes now.
You gave the sandals to Anryu, though, or I'm probably mispronouncing that.
Yeah, Anryu. I think it's Anryu. Yeah, which I think is Japanese for like demon or something like that. No, it's not demon. Oni is demon, but Anryu is something monstrous. But
super demon.
Yeah, super mega demon, mega cyborg demon. When I moved over towards like, yeah, let's actually like do a story here. Then I had to kind of like tweak him a little bit and like, so the costume he has now, he has that like red plastic, you know, kasa, like traditional samurai hat. And he has kind of like the poncho, like the Clint Eastwood man with no name. And so I just added stuff like that, mostly just to give him a silhouette, because that's like one of the main things for character design is like, you know, Batman with all the lights turned out and a light behind him, you know, the silhouette of just the bat ears and the cape. That's Batman. You don't need any mm-hmm. more details than that. That's Batman. So that's what you have to try to think about when you're designing characters is like, what does the silhouette look like? So yeah, a lot of his costume now is just about silhouetting basically. But yeah.
We have Chris, and I'm going to try to pronounce this. I think we have the correct name, Jingasa. Maybe are the name of the sandals. I'm not exactly sure if I nailed that, but I think it's close. So, I mean, these interiors...
I'm just going to say Jenga sandals.
I really like sandals with the Jenga blocks. That has a nice, like, chef kiss ring to it.
That's not insulting to an entire culture at all. Let's just call it. Yeah.
Let's back away from that. So,
thank you, Chris.
When getting into these interiors, you know, what does that workflow look like for you? What type of, you know, do you put any sort of music on or maybe like a Western or a, you know, samurai flick in the background? Like, how does that, you know, work for you?
Yeah, well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, it's like difficult to listen to like a podcast while you're writing because you're kind of engaging like the same parts of your brain. Maybe not everybody's that way, but for me it is. Like if I'm trying to write an email or something like that, if I'm listening to people talk, I have to shut off the people talking so I can think. Yeah.
Or you start typing what they're saying.
Yeah, right. get in a lot of trouble that way. With drawing, I think like the old trope is that like, you know, writing is like left side and like art is right side or something like that. And that's like a really reductive way to think about it. But it feels like it's kind of true because if I'm doing writing, I can't be like listening to people talk. If I'm doing drawing, I can listen to people talk. So drawing is usually when I'm catching up on podcasts, except at the very earliest stages. The very early stages when you're doing construction and you're trying to put, you know, elements in the composition and you're trying to set up a whole page, you're doing the hard stuff. You're eating your veggies at that point with the art. If I'm doing that, I need like complete silence.
Really?
It's really, I don't know what kind of work it is in terms of where, you know, what neurons it's firing in your brain. But it's not like writing and it's not like drawing. It's like engineering almost. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. And that's it's kind of the most rewarding part, but it's also really not fun, in a lot of ways. Once you get to the point where you're like drawing faces and details, that's dessert. That's like the best part. So you can just put on a podcast, a movie, whatever, and just cruise through that. That's the fun part.
That's awesome. And you mentioned you like doing things digitally. You know, what programs do you like to use?
So I use Clip Studio Paint primarily for everything. I have dabbled in some of the others, but I think, you know, why mess with success? It was designed to make comics. Use it to make comics.
So for anyone looking to dive into this, and we have Chris saying this looks awesome. Thank you. We're actually going to be pulling up the Kickstarter to dive into it soon. You know, what type of, you know, nods can we see in this? You love a whole slew of different things. So like what type of Easter eggs can we expect within this?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, it's hard to get away from my influence, I guess. So, you know, I mentioned Ronin Digital Express, you know, it has a lot of like, you know, as its base, you know, a lot of spaghetti Western, a lot of Kurosawa, old black and white samurai movies. And then kind of like a bit of a paint job, of like 90s anime, you know, Cowboy Bebop, Trigun, stuff like that. Maybe a little bit of that retro futuristic Star Wars in there, just mm-hmm. a little bit. But we're not that far off in the future. This is still planet Earth and, you know, stuff like that, even though it is far off in the future. And then, yeah, there's like a little, I think with this story particularly, I don't think I realized I was doing this at the front, but, lately I've been kind of describing it as like the climax of Kill Bill Volume 1, where Uma Thurman goes into the, I think it's called the House of the Blue Lotus or something like that, where with Oren Ishii and the Crazy 88 and all those guys, and she has to fight like 800 people, you know, to finally get to Oren Ishii at the end in that snowy garden area. I think a lot of that was kind of going through my head as I'm like, I want my protagonist to walk into a completely hostile situation with dozens of people who want to kill him, but he's dead set on getting what he's after, which, yeah, you know, is not totally revealed right away. I mean, there's this female character that he has a bit of a past with, and that's revealed over the course of the story. So you kind of think he's there for her, but then at the end there's a bit of a twist, to say the least. But yeah, so he's going in there, presumably to rescue her, and he's just relentless, like mowing down these guys, and he gets knocked down plenty himself. There's like maybe three times where I think his life is potentially in major question, just because of how hard he got hit. But yeah, it's just it's wall to, there's two pages of exposition and then 18 pages of fighting, pretty much.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you were mentioning the Kill Bill influence, I it clicked instantly for me that the intensity of combat within this is just, it's you have the pedal to the floor the entire time.
Yeah. And it's actually, even for people who like the webcomic, or even people who are kind of soft on the webcomic, like, oh yeah, it was fine, like maybe I would read it again, it's even a lot different than the webcomic for me, because, you know, the webcomic had action in it, but it was much more of like the Western style, where there's a lot of like mood and a lot of slow build, mm-hmm. and then like quick pops of action, you know, whereas this is the opposite. This is like no mood, just fighting and just, you know, action up and down. So it's actually kind of different approach and style from what's in the webcomic already, that I think, yeah, anybody who's kind of soft on the webcomic who hasn't backed the Kickstarter, give it a second chance. And you might actually, this might be more your style.
We have our good friend Aaron joining us on Facebook saying, hey guys, welcome to the stream, Aaron. Thank you for joining us. It's always nice to see you, Panda. And then we have our good friend Chris saying, yes, that was a homage to Bruce Lee's Game of Death. Kill Bill was an amazing two-part film. I can't wait for Volume 3. I heard Volume 3 is supposed to be based upon their daughters, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't know. I mean, he may, you know, I'm not like the Tarantino guy, but the few times I like him, I won't make any apology for that, but you know, I'm not like obsessed. He's one great filmmaker within my rotation, I'll put it that way. But the few times I've heard him talk about it in like an interview, I think he's kind of being a little cute about, yeah, what his next movie's gonna be. So maybe it will be Kill Bill, maybe not.
I heard the next one's his last one, if I'm not mistaken. That's what I keep hearing.
That's the rumor.
Man, 18 pages of carnage. Yes, I think right there would be a perfect segue. Let's go ahead, head over to the Kickstarter and see what Tower of Death is all about. So, guys, get your katanas ready. The action's about to begin. Trying to get better with those segues.
I know, that was great. Yeah, get those katanas ready.
get those katanas ready. You know, I think it's interesting too. Katanas, I think what, if you display them to the left, it's for war, and then for right is for peace, or it might be vice versa. The way you actually display the katana, it shows whether you're in war or not.
Oh, I didn't know that. I have one right over here, so maybe I should read up on the proper display.
So let's go ahead. We're going to drop this link in chat for everyone that is watching. Be sure to check this out with us. If you're able to back, we would love to see that. Simply putting this on Facebook and Twitter works just as well. So if money's tight, word of mouth is 100% free and you have nothing to lose. I've read this. This has the geekly seal of approval. Tower of Death, a one-shot indie Western manga comic. Currently at $2,205 of a $2,000 goal, 62 backers, and 4 days left to go. Is this your first Kickstarter?
Yeah, it is.
So how you feel right now? I heard Kickstarters can be pretty stressful.
Yeah, I mean, I feel good. I think that I set a pretty modest goal, I would say. And yeah, that was really, it's an experiment. Everything so far that I've done in comics has just been an experiment. Like, let's try it. Let's see what happens. If it had not gone well, then I would have just done the postmortem on why and tried again some other time, but yeah, definitely very pleasantly surprised that this has gone the way it has so far.
And this is the first time that Ronin Digital Express has headed to print with a brand new 18 plus self-contained 20 page adventure. I really respect that too. Like, if it would have failed, like the whole like understanding why, I think that's where a lot of people just drop it. Like if it fails, they just drop it and move on to the next thing. So I think it's really awesome that you would open that up and try to like examine why it happened.
It's really hard, honestly. There's two ways to be about it. You can either be, you know, you can thumb your nose at people who are, their emotions are really in it, or you can just kind of try to understand where they're coming from. And I try to do the latter, but like people who are really nervous about whether or not things are going to succeed. And if they fail, they take that as like a, you know, I failed. This is me. Like I'm being rejected. You know, I just want to like put my hand on their shoulder and be like, no, like it's okay. Just figure out what went wrong. Try again next time. You know, it's not that big a deal. No one's out to get you. It's going to be fine. And yeah, that's just sort of my feeling on this, but I get it because it's like, you know, you put art out there, it feels like an American Idol audition, you know, like it's a very vulnerable thing to do, but yeah, this is how I see it.
So we have a really interesting cover right here. Who are the four characters we're looking at?
So up top is your protagonist, the green-eyed Ronin. And then right under his elbow there is Onryu. So he's like the dragon in trope speak. So he's like the big, in Indiana Jones, he's the large henchman, right? So he's like the 7 foot tall samurai, cyborg robot guy that you got to fight. Below him, that's Ganbu Lao. So he's like a corrupt, mob boss, politician type dude, and he's I guess the main bad guy. But you know, just not really a physical enemy so much as just kind of the guy with all the money and all the power and all the henchmen. So he's there. Those ninja guys running out of the fire down there. That's Club Mu. MU. Yeah, so they're just like a bunch of like mercenary Ronin thugs that you can just hire. And so there's a bunch of them that he has to fight. And then our very svelte figure to the right is Kitsune. She is being held hostage by Ganbu Lao. She is the one who appears to be the target of the green-eyed Ronin's interest here. And yeah, she has a history with the green-eyed Ronin that's just sort of implicitly revealed here and there in flashbacks, in the midst of all the action. So yeah, this is very easy to grab onto tropes. I think that, you know, as soon as you see them on the page, you kind of know who they are and what role they play in the story. That's by design. We only got 20 pages. Most of them are action. So we got to get going as soon as possible.
Very gorgeous. I love the cover. And then right here's sneak peek at some of the interiors, and I just loved how detailed these are. You did such a good job of making this dude like a sleazeball crime like boss mafia man. Like I love just his demeanor, the, you know, and just everything about this. The fight sequence though is like This pose right here where he's holding it, and then he has the other, he has it right behind him. This is such an awesome stance right here. I love this.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. That's definitely like the sort of 300 pose, right?
Where
yeah, he has to face down all those guys, right?
And then the impact from this guy when he lands is just so beastly too. And right here's that scene I was talking about where he's holding up the katana and he's using it to like block like that. It's such an awesome, it goes to show you how powerful this dude is.
Yeah, he's getting wailed on so hard that, yeah, he's using his forearm to backstop the sword so it doesn't pop back and hit him in the head. But yeah, and that's definitely, I'm glad you took that impression because that was what I was going for, was like, this is like getting hit by a semi truck. Like,
yeah,
he's off his balance now. Man, and he stays off balance until the very end. So
yeah. Such gorgeous interiors as well. And then we also have some goodies down here too. So stickers and bookmarks. Now the Green-Eyed Ronin, I noticed there's four X's before his name. Is there any special symbolism behind that?
He has a real name. So I wanted, when he was in the webcomic, I wanted to keep him nameless because of like Clint Eastwood, Man with No Name type stuff. Toshiro Mifune in the movie Yojimbo, also a Ronin with no name. So since I was playing with those tropes, I kind of wanted to keep his name out of it. But he does have a real name. We'll get to it pretty quickly when we get back to the webcomic. But I just kind of wanted to hint that, like, no, he actually has a name. Like, it's not just the Green-Eyed Ronin.
I love this cover B as well.
And I didn't want her to call him the Green-Eyed Ronin because she knows his real name. So again, it's a Kill Bill move. Like, I bleep out his name basically whenever you see it now in this story.
So was the cover B print done by you as well?
Yep, I did everything. It's all me.
Yeah, this is gorgeous. And I'm loving this color palette on the side too. Like how it's like purple and bluish hues for him.
Yeah, I really, I was definitely looking toward just like old Japanese movie posters. They all kind of have like really crowded kanji and then really big, bold characters. And then, yeah, they tend to have that little sort of dramatis personae thing, like on one side or another, where they've just got like a bunch of blocks that show
you know,
the cast or the characters. And so, yeah, that's definitely what I was going for.
Yeah, this is gorgeous. We have Chris saying, "Wowza, a one-man comic book creating army." Yeah, it's remarkable you're able to do this all by yourself, man.
Yeah, thanks. It's definitely, I know why not a lot of people do it this way, because it's very lonely, and it's very I feel like a monk, you know, illuminating manuscripts or something in my tower, and. You just spend so many hours heads down doing it, and then, you know, you produce something that someone could read while they're taking a dump.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Or you know, maybe they're doing number one and number two, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, it's wild. It's wild how much work goes into it, how many hours. But yeah, no, it's I wouldn't have it any other way, but there's definitely pros and cons to doing it.
You know, I feel that though too with the podcasting, like I'm often like in my corner and it looks cool. The corner looks cool. It's cause like, I don't want to be like staring at just blank wall when I'm alone here for 8 hours a day. And like when I do my interviews, like they're so energetic cause I finally get to talk to someone. Like it's like, yeah, finally.
Well, that's, yeah. I like doing the shows too, because it's like my only chance to talk to somebody, which like, that sounds a little more pathetic than I intended. But, do you have the thing too, where like, I know you have a family, but do you have this thing too where like this is like a whole nother world that they just don't know about?
Yeah. I mean, dude, when I talk about like comics and stuff, my girlfriend, like she's interested to a degree, like just the supportiveness. But like my friends, like I tell them my interview and they're like, okay, from who, DC or Marvel? It's like, okay, well you're really not into it. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like a whole different sphere. Like, and when I first started getting into comics, like you don't realize it, but there's like circles, and it's like you have your gaming circle, you have your comic circle, you have your webcomic circle, and all different circles. And like, it took some time for me to dive into the Twitter like comic sphere to like find like all you guys. Like, I think it took me quite some time to even find you.
Yeah, I don't even know what my circle is, you know. I mean, I'm a similar way where I have like my IRL friends, you know, and I'm very invested in my IRL world, but yeah, they ask like, oh, you know, what do you do? Or I meet new people, what do you do? And like, I avoid the comic thing altogether pretty much, because I don't want to have to go through the whole thing where I'm like, it's like, imagine you go on like a Tinder date or something, and then, yep, you know what, you end up on a date with a forensic accountant or something like that, and you're like, oh, what's that like? And they're like, well, it's really interesting,
actually.
Like, yeah, and you're like, oh no, I regret asking. So I'm so afraid of getting that back.
Well, the worst part is like,
I also don't want to fight the assumption of like, I don't mean superheroes, I don't mean Spider-Man, yep, I don't mean Batman. There's a whole nother lane. There's European comics that are Westerns, and, you know, things, mm-hmm, that's stuff that I like. It's just, it's so removed from people's common understanding of it that it's just not worth it.
It's easier to get strangers to support your work than it will ever be to get friends to support your work. Like, I don't know why that is, but like a lot of people, like I have a lot of in real life people who support what I do and such, but like, yeah, man, I'll tell you what, like out of like the 2,000, 3,000 friends I have, I only see 5 of them like my stuff, like my in real life people, yeah, you know what I mean?
There is kind of like a, yeah, well, and it's also like, I do this too with like feedback, where like if people are, you know, if my friends went to my Twitter and they were like, oh, such good art, bro. I don't know that that would mean much. It would maybe make it look like something's going on here to somebody I don't know. But, you know, the most valuable feedback I get is usually if someone sends me a private message and they're like, dude, that thing you did, that was the shit.
Yeah.
There's nobody to show off for. There's nothing they're trying to get out of me. And then I know that's the truth, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I don't even know necessarily what like your friend, like you want your friends and your spouse and everybody else to like, you want that generic level of like, we support you in your dreams from, mm-hmm, them, but you know, you don't need to ask for more than that. I think, yeah, that you make it weird if you try to push it too much on them.
Yeah. 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 And my thing is too, like, you need to be able to run on your own motivation. Like, I think that's, yeah, like the biggest, like, test of mental endurance for whatever passion you're trying to chase after. If you could do this by yourself with no one supporting you, and you're able to give 110%, then you're going to be able to give 120% when people are supporting you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the discipline thing that we were, yeah, talking about, yep, earlier. It's like, you just kind of, you know, would you continue to do this if you had, you know, zero signals coming from outside telling you that it's a good idea? And that's when you learn whether or not you really want to do it.
No, and I think a good idea would be, let's go through some of these tiers right now, and get all this hype out there for you guys to check out with us. We have Chris saying, let me tell you about the wonderful world of accounts receivable. We have $8 for this PDF, so 20-page comic, plus a few pages of back matter in high-res PDF form. You can get the printed copy for just $2 more. Holy crap, $2 more, full 20-page comic. This is an awesome read, guys. You are going to be missing out if you're not taking advantage of this. We have the digital bundle at $15. What's going to be included with this?
So with the digital bundle, I am also I wanted to give digital backers, because I'm only shipping in the US, so anybody who's overseas misses out on some of the other tiers. So I wanted to throw them a little bit of an extra if they wanted it. So I will pull probably the best episode of the webcomic is this one shot called Legendary Ronin Warui Hito, and it's a 20-page one shot, full color. So I will pull that together into a PDF with some back matter, and then I also have like an art book that I pulled together during the pandemic.
So cool.
Yeah, it's like 40 something pages of just like, you know, if you want my pictures of Spider-Man and, you know, pop culture stuff, that's in there. So that's just kind of a little extra, you know, here you go for digital backers.
And then we have the sticker pack at 20 or more. So let me go ahead and scroll down here. So you're going to get Tower of Death printed copy. You're going to get the RDE bookmark and then 3 RDE stickers. So these stickers are gorgeous too, and this bookmark is phenomenal. Does this take you to the Substack?
Yep.
Cool. That's perfect, man. That is chef kiss.
Yeah.
And by the way, guys, Rent does have an awesome Substack that is in the description. Be sure to check it out. And subscribing's free as well, right?
That's right. Yeah. I haven't really. There is a paid tier on my regular newsletter, but I don't know. I haven't totally like figured out the thing that makes the monetization. I probably should not be saying this, because mm-hmm. this is kind of like, you know, don't bother giving me money. If you want to give me money, I'll take money. That would be great. But are you going to get a ton of extras out of doing the paid tier. Not right now. Maybe in the future.
Yeah, yeah. I'm the same way. I don't know what it is. Like, I have paid slots on Calendarly, but I don't ever put them out there because I feel so weird. Because it's basically like, I don't want people to pay. I just want a day off. let me have a day off.
Yeah, well, and I'm just like, the way I put it to people is, I'm like, just use it like my Patreon. Like, if you're if you're the kind of person who really wants to support artists and you're like, where's your Patreon? Use the Substack as the Patreon and just do the paid tier. Yeah.
At $30 or more, we have the print pack, so you're going to get everything in the sticker pack, plus two prints, and those prints are going to be right here, these gorgeous prints right here. And then you're going to also get an alternate cover, and then two 5x7 full-color Tower of Death retro-style teasers, so awesome, man.
It might be a little misleading. I think the cover B up there, if you scroll that up to, that's the alternate cover.
Okay, so that's what I thought.
Yeah, I won't put that on the actual book itself. It'll be a separate print, so maybe that's misleading on my part. My bad.
No, you're good. And then the Not Safe for Work print packs, you're gonna get this hot and steamy picture right here without that sticker on there covering those bits for just $35. So, and then custom sketch. So are you gonna draw anything they want, or is there gonna be certain limitations to this?
Yeah, within reason is what I've been saying. So you can either leave it to me to just draw you something cool, or if you have something that you really have your heart set on, I will do that within reason. So if you're like, oh, I want Spider-Man like swinging against a full city skyline and all this cool stuff, like, no, I'm not going to draw you a splash page. I will draw you a sketch of a character. I'll do the ink, so it'll have like, you know, good lines. It won't just be like a scribbled piece of shit. Like, it'll be a real drawing. But yeah, I mean, think like, you know, just a drawing of a character or something like that.
And I love how the image right here is the stick, just a stick guy.
It'll be better than that. But yeah.
That's awesome. And then we have the Not Safe for Work sketch at 100. So keep in mind, guys, you're going to get everything from the print, or plus you're going to get, excuse me, I'm fumbling the ball on this. Everything from the print pack plus a custom black and white pen for this sketch. And then for the Not Safe for Work, is that kind of the same premise? They're going to get everything.
Yeah, so that's just a little bit more, and then you'll also get the Kitsune print that is to the left. So it's the exact same as the previous custom sketch tier, but it also has that Kitsune print, since that's a Not Safe for Work item. And then I will also do a Not Safe for Work sketch. So if you wanted to back the custom sketch before and you ask me for something that's a little more risque, I'll be like, that's a Not Safe for Work request, so you should have backed that tier. So if you want something that's a little more spicy, you have to back this tier instead.
So if you want Spider-Man swinging by his dick, get this tier instead.
There is some precedent for that. In my oeuvre. Yeah, I do a Christmas card a Not Safe for Work Christmas card every year.
I love that.
For paid subscribers. And it's always Spider-Man themed, and it's always some kind of double entendre with him and Mary Jane. I go full balls on that one. So
did you ever read the comic where Mary Jane died from cancer from a Spider-Man's, his splooge was toxic?
Yeah, that's like Spider-Man's Dark Knight Returns or something.
Yes.
Yeah. my answer is no, I didn't read that piece of shit, but I know about it.
So Ren, for anyone who is on the fence about backing this campaign, what would you say to them if you just had a few moments to kind of help push them over that fence?
You know, I would say that if you like, if you just like action and like manga specifically, and you like, I mean, I feel like it's just really easy to like stuff, you know, like samurais, katana swords, you know, westerns, stuff like that. It's all easy to like tropes. It's action. I think the story's got something to say. There's, even though it's mostly action, there's kind of like a surprising emotional through line. And yeah, I think that it's an investment in an all-in-one comic creator. So, you know, if you like people who take my approach, you can show it with your wallet. The other thing would be, this is going to be an ongoing thing. This is not just like a one-off, you know, see you later kind of a thing. You know, there is the webcomic that I've already made that this is part of, and we're going to continue with that webcomic indefinitely, and I do mean that. It's not something I'm just going to give up on. So in 5 or 10 years, when everyone's talking about Ronin Digital Express on Substack, if you want to be able to say, I've got like the original, like the printed manga, like the Kickstarter, there's only like 100 of these that exist, could be you. That's all I'm saying.
Could be you.
And also, like with the sketch tiers too, I don't, because I make comics pretty much all myself, that is most of my time. So I don't do things like commissions. So yeah, I mean, if you wanted like a piece of original art and you're like, oh, I'll just ask him for a commission later, I might not do them. So if you really want like some kind of a commission out of me, this is going to be your best bet for now.
And who knows when the next Kickstarter might happen. So guys, you have 4 days to get that commission while it's still up. Ren, what's next for you in 2023? I mean, do you have any other projects that, you know, you might be announcing soon?
Yeah, so I'm working right now on Fistful of Yen. Which is like it's going to be for free because I can't sell it because it violates too many copyrights. But basically the Clint Eastwood character from the Dollars trilogy and the Toshiro Mifune character from Yojimbo and Sanjuro, I'm doing a comic where they team up. And
badass.
Yeah, it would basically be like, what would like a movie in the 60s with Clint Eastwood and Toshiro Mifune as a cowboy and a samurai teaming up look like, is what mm-hmm. the comic is. So I'm doing that. That'll be like a full-length graphic novel. It'll be like, you know, 90 pages or something. I'm going to split it up into three parts, and we'll be publishing that closer to the fall. So if you follow me on social, but especially Substack, you'll be seeing sneak peeks of that once this campaign is over, all the way up to publish time. So yeah, I'm working on that. I've already announced that. There's plenty of stuff that you can check out there. Other than that, yeah, right now I'm just kind of doing, you know, Ronin Digital Express on Substack was kind of a prototype. So right now I'm doing like, you know, the real shit. So, you know, what's the storyline look like for the next, you know, several years, doing some of the world building elements mm-hmm. that you have to do. So yeah, I'm kind of just doing sort of that pre-production work on the reboot of Ronin, which I think is going to be probably sometime earlier next year. And I want to commit to, you know, like roughly 50 pages per year, just split up into little episodes, if not more, if I can manage it. And so yeah, that's nothing really outside of those two things for right now.
That's awesome, man. I cannot wait. We got to get you on for Fistful again. Like, you know, you'll be doing it for free, so maybe we do some sort of like director's cut where we'll go through each page and kind of point out like Easter eggs or whatever you want. I would love that.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'll keep you posted on that. And yeah, it's tough because there's not really anything I can do to print. I might pull together another art book where I can put like some prints from Fistful of Yen into the art book. Maybe I'll print those and like try to sell them through the website or something like that. So there might be like some version of it you can get in print, but yeah, there's not really.
It sucks you can't.
Like, I can't even monetize it. Yeah,
can you put up like a tip jar?
well, who is that? There is one creator who. Is it Daniel Warren Johnson who makes like fan Star Wars comics and then at shows he has like, you know, you can just take this comic, but taps on the tip jar.
Hey, read the sign.
Yeah, if you value independent artists and comics, then yeah. Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I'll set something like that up maybe and then we'll see. But yeah, I have to state for all the lawyers watching that I'm not directly monetizing that project. I'm just doing it for the love of the game and the genres. Don't worry. Don't sue me.
Don't sue him. Yeah. And if you do, the Geek Army's coming after you. So,
and we don't have very much money.
We don't have very many members either. So, so Ren, for anyone who is looking to get into art, I mean, you kind of had a heads up until you were able to do the people part of it pretty well. But for individuals who aren't quite there, maybe they suck at the people part and the technical part, what would be some of your advice to kind of help them, you know, try to get more discipline and try to hit that level where they feel like they're satisfied with their work?
Yeah. I mean, the truth is it's kind of, drawing is the same as like trying to get abs, you know? I mean, like it's just, there's no shortcuts. And it's just going to take a lot of discipline and a lot of time. I do not have abs. So
yeah, me. I was about to say I'm very undisciplined in that area.
Yeah. I've got like a pretty like slightly better than average dad bod, which is probably where I'm going to die. But yeah, no, there's just no shortcuts to it. You are going to have to draw a lot of really bad drawings for a very long time before you get something that's good. But you'll see little signs of life here and there, and that's kind of what keeps you going. But my big thing is like... my big challenge, I would say, is draw every day.
Ooh, and I like that.
It can be, do what you can do. Like, it can be 10 minutes on your lunch break on a napkin, or it can be 4 hours. I draw for 4 hours almost every day. So I like wake up early in the morning, I draw for two. After kids go to bed, I draw for two. If I can get more in, I will. But if you really want to supercharge yourself and like get there in a year, you have to draw for like 4 hours every day at least. But if you can be patient, you know, at the very least, just draw every day, make that the habit, and then just put in as much time as you can. And yeah, I think that once you sort of get into that, it's kind of like going to the gym, where like the first couple of weeks you're going to the gym, you feel like shit all the time, but then the pathways start to develop where like you're getting the endorphin rushes and stuff.
You get addicted to it.
Yeah. You start to feel good after you exercise. The same thing's going to happen with drawing. So just do it every single day. I mean, you can take one day off, but like do it every single day. Don't make excuses about artist's block, writer's block, bullshit. It's all bullshit. You need to do it. And if it's going to be bad, then it's going to be bad. So be it. Get those bad drawings out of your system. It's just like burning fat at the gym. You got to get the bad drawings out of your system. Do it every single day, as much as you can tolerate.
Awesome advice there. We have Chris. Yeah, a six pack definitely isn't in any foreseeable future. I like carbs too much. I just tell people I'm cultivating mass, you know. That's all I need.
You never know when this is all going to go to shit. You need to you need to pack on those calories. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, Ren, outside of creating, what are you consuming? You know, let's end the podcast strong. You know, what are you watching? 4 hours a day seems like you don't have a lot of time to consume, but you know, when you do have time to consume, you know, reading books, you know, comics, you know, what's on your agenda?
Yeah, pretty much everything is dedicated to Ronin Digital Express Enterprises, right? So if I'm reading books about Japanese culture and you know, Eastern philosophy, and just kind of looking for bits and bobs that I can pull to put into the story. I read a lot of comic books. It's kind of hard to, this is something I kind of want to work on a little bit this year, but it's kind of hard for me to read comics for enjoyment anymore. Just because I'm taking them apart in my brain, and trying to learn from them. So I want to kind of get back to just like enjoying reading comics a little bit. But yeah, I read a lot of comics, mostly just to study them. If I am watching something, it's usually like an old movie. I'll pick like an old Western I haven't seen before, or I'll pick an old samurai movie I haven't seen before. Beyond that, not a whole lot of time to do much else. I like doing a lot of real life stuff. Like I like going to the cigar bar with my friends and, you know, stuff like that. I do still smoke the occasional cigar. No more cigarettes, to kind of bring it full circle from our.
Well, occasional cigar is way different from smoking.
It's not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
No. It's not the same thing at all. But yeah, so, you know, I invest a lot in my real life relationships and my real life hobbies. There's not much time for anything else aside from
have
sleep.
You seen The Swordsman? It came out in 2020, but you know, it's a little bit old, newer, but it is so badass. Like the dude like just takes on waves of people, and it's like it feels like one of the most realistic, you know, because you see him get tired, you see him like struggling, you know, because that's the thing, when you see people just go up against waves of people, they're usually just like they have just adrenaline, like they don't ever tire out. This dude is like stumbling, like breathing heavy, and like he's just taking on wave and wave of people, and I just love it so much. If you haven't, you should check it out.
No, I have not heard of that one, but that, I mean, that's, I like what you said there, because that's you know, sometimes it is fun to watch like the who's the guy that directs all the Resident Evil movies? Paul Anderson or something?
I don't know. Your guess would be as good as mine.
Yeah, so it's kind of fun to watch that stuff sometimes, where someone's just like, you know, doing ballet as they cut down 100 people and they don't break a sweat. Like that can be fun to watch, but like I'm a little bit more attracted to that stuff where, like you said, where it's like, because I mean, I don't know how many people watching have actually been in a real fight or have witnessed like a real fight, like a real act of violence. But it's over before you know it, and everybody is fucking exhausted when it's done. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you expend so much energy in just a flash that, yeah, I mean, it does not take long to just get totally worn out.
Duels were usually under a minute, I think, like samurai duels.
They don't take long. And in a lot of the movies, this is why like the samurai movies and Western movies, they share a lot of tropes, and why they're so easy to blend together. because a lot of old samurai movies, there's not a lot of like what you would call sword crossing, where there's like, you know, ting 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 ting, mm-hmm. like there's not a lot of that going on. It's a lot of it very similar to the Western, comes down to like who can get it out of the scabbard the fastest and cut the other guy's throat. So there's a lot of just like, you know, single draw, single cut type stuff.
Which, oh man, you did that in the webcomic when the Green Eyed Ronin throws up the thing and he's just like, and the dude's holding his throat. Holy fudge.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's how action in that genre tends to work. I mean, there are some examples of like a prolonged sword fight, but it's not really, it's not what Hollywood has you thinking these days, where it's like mm-hmm. just a continued, you know, clinging of the swords. Yeah. There's a lot of like a great example of this is this old movie Harikiri, which is like it's from 1962. It's an old samurai movie, and there's a long samurai battle between these two guys who are consummate pros. Okay, so they are just like the top of their game with a katana, and most of the fight they do cross swords here and there, but it's like bing bing, and then they like back up and they like, you know, they keep changing their mm-hmm. poses based on what the other guy's doing. And what they're doing is they're trying to figure out what the other guy's going to do, you know, and like, how do I block what he's going to do? And then how do I take the advantage? How do I put myself in a position where I can block and then easily cut and kill him? So there's a lot of that like mind game stuff where they're just like studying each other, and then they'll take their shot, they'll cross swords, and they back up again, and they study each other for a few minutes, and then again. And then, so like, as far as like a long fight, that's what it would look like. Yeah, you can, like, I mean, if you go on YouTube and you look, go on YouTube and find like a sword tournament or something mm-hmm. like that, like real people doing it, you'll see the same thing.
We have Chris saying, favorite mass fighting scene in cinema, the hallway scene in original Old Boy. I really liked, what was it? It wasn't cinema, it was TV series, The Daredevil, season 2 with the Punisher just killing people in prison, shanking them and shit. I loved it.
Well, to Chris's point, I mean, pretty much any like one take action sequence, for me, I don't even know how to rank order them. I'm mystified by any director and crew that can pull something like that off. No matter what, there was one in the newest Bond movie. You know, I mean, anytime they do that, I'm like, oh yeah, this is good shit. You know,
it is.
That's like real. You know, I mean, like it used to be that if you wanted to, I can't remember who said it, but if you wanted to see something impressive on film, you had to do something impressive. You know, like you couldn't just CGI it. You had to actually mm-hmm. do the stunt. So it's kind of like a throwback to that era where, yeah, there's no faking a one take sequence like that.
No, absolutely. And guys, I think right here would be the perfect time for us to end. So right here is the link to check out this Kickstarter. Be sure to back. And if you're unable to back, put it on Twitter, Facebook, anywhere you can. Word of mouth is 100% free. Hope you all have a lovely Friday. Most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.